Book Fourth, Summer Vacation. A pleasant sight it was, when having clomb the heights of Kendal, and that dreary moor was crossed, at length, as from a rampart's edge, I overlooked the bed of Windermere. I bounded down the hills, shouting amain a lusty summons to the further shore for the old ferryman. And when he came, I did not step into the well-known boat without a cordial welcome. Thence right forth I took my way, now drawing towards home, to that sweet valley where I had been reared. 'Twas but a short hour's walk, ere veering round, I saw the snow-white church upon its hill, sit like a throned lady, sending out a gracious look all over its domain. Glad greetings had I, and some tears, perhaps, from my old dame, so motherly and good, while she perused me with a parent's pride. The thoughts of gratitude shall fall like dew upon thy grave, good creature. While my heart can beat, I never will forget thy name. Heaven's blessing be upon thee where thou liest, after thy innocent and busy stir in narrow cares, thy little daily growth of calm enjoyments, after 80 years, and more than 80, of untroubled life. Childless, yet by the strangers to thy blood, honoured with little less than filial love. Great joy was mine to see thee once again, thee and thy dwelling, and a throng of things about its narrow precincts, all beloved, and many of them seeming yet my own. Why should I speak of what 1,000 hearts have felt, and every man alive can guess? The rooms, the court, the garden were not left long unsaluted, and the spreading pine and broad stone table underneath its boughs, our summer seat in many a festive hour, and that unruly child of mountain birth, the forward brook, which, soon as he was boxed within our garden, found himself at once, as if by trick insidious and unkind, stripped of his voice, and left to dimple down without an effort and without a will, a channel paved by the hand of man. I looked at him and smiled again, and in the press of 20,000 thoughts, "Hark," quoth I, "pretty prisoner, are you there?" And now, reviewing soberly that hour, I marvel that a fancy did not flash upon me, and a strong desire straightway, at sight of such an emblem that showed forth so aptly my late course of even days, and all their smooth enthralment, to pen down a satire on myself. My aged dame was with me at my side. She guided me, I willing, nay, wishing to be led. The face of every neighbour whom I met was as a volume to me. Some I hailed far off upon the road, or at their work, unceremonious greetings, interchanged with half the length of a long field between. Among my schoolfellows I scattered round a salutation that was more constrained, though earnest, doubtless with a little pride, but with more shame, for my habiliments, the transformation, and the gay attire. Delighted did I take my place again at our domestic table, and, dear friend, relating simply as my wish hath been a poet's history, can I leave untold the joy with which I laid me down at night in my accustomed bed, more welcome now, perhaps, than if it had been more desired, or had been more often thought of with regret. That bed, whence I had heard the roaring wind and clamorous rain, that bed where I so oft had lain awake on breezy nights to watch the moon in splendour couched among the leaves of a tall ash that near our cottage stood, had watched her with fixed eyes, while to and fro in the dark summit of the moving tree she rocked with every impulse of the wind. Among the faces which it pleased me well to see was one by ancient right our inmate, a rough terrier of the hills, by birth and call of nature preordained to hunt the badger and unearth the fox among the impervious crags. But having been from youth our own adopted, he had passed into a gentler service. And when first the boyish spirit flagged, and day by day along my veins I kindled with the stir, the fermentation, and the vernal heat of poesy, affecting private shades like a sick lover, then this dog was used to watch me, an attendant and a friend, obsequious to my steps early and late, though often of such dilatory walk, tired and uneasy at the halts I made. 100 times when in these wanderings I have been busy with the toil of verse, great pains and little progress, and at once some fair enchanting image in my mind rose up, full-formed like Venus from the sea, have I sprung forth towards him and let loose my hand upon his back with stormy joy, caressing him again and yet again. And when in the public roads at eventide I sauntered, like a river murmuring and talking to itself, at such a season it was his custom to jog on before, but duly, whensoever he had met a passenger approaching, would he turn to give me timely notice, and straightway, punctual to such admonishment, I hushed my voice, composed my gait, and shaped myself to give and take a greeting that might save my name from piteous rumours, such as wait on men suspected to be crazed in brain. Those walks, well worthy to be prized and loved, regretted, that word too was on my tongue, but they were richly laden with all good, and cannot be remembered but with thanks and gratitude and perfect joy of heart. Those walks did now, like a returning spring, come back on me again. When first I made once more the circuit of our little lake, if ever happiness hath lodged with man, that day consummate happiness was mine, wide-spreading, steady, calm, contemplative. The sun was set, or setting, when I left our cottage door, and evening soon brought on a sober hour, not winning or serene, for cold and raw the air was, and untuned. But as a face we love is sweetest then, when sorrow damps it, or whatever look it chance to wear, is sweetest if the heart have fullness in itself, even so with me it fared that evening. Gently did my soul put off her veil, and self-transmuted stood naked as in the presence of her God. As on I walked, a comfort seemed to touch a heart that had not been disconsolate. Strength came where weakness was not known to be, at least not felt, and restoration came like an intruder knocking at the door of unacknowledged weariness. I took the balance in my hand and weighed myself. I saw but little, and thereat was pleased. Little did I remember, and even this still pleased me more. But I had hopes and peace and swellings of the spirits, was rapt and soothed, conversed with promises, had glimmering views how life pervades the undecaying mind, how the immortal soul with godlike power informs, creates, and thaws the deepest sleep that time can lay upon her. How on earth man, if he do but live within the light of high endeavours, daily spreads abroad his being with a strength that cannot fail. Nor was there want of milder thoughts, of love, of innocence, and holiday repose, and more than pastoral quiet in the heart of amplest projects, and a peaceful end at last, or glorious, by endurance won. Thus musing, in a wood I sat me down alone, continuing there to muse. Meanwhile, the mountain heights were slowly overspread with darkness, and before the rippling breeze the long lake lengthened out its hoary line, and in the sheltered coppice where I sat, around me from among the hazel leaves, now here, now there, stirred by the straggling wind, came intermittingly a breath-like sound, a respiration short and quick, which oft, yea, might I say, again and yet again, mistaking for the panting of my dog, the off and on companion of my walk, I turned my head to look if he were there. A freshness also found I at this time in human life, the life I mean of those whose occupations really I loved. The prospect often touched me with surprise, crowded and full and changed, as seemed to me even as a garden in the heat of spring after an 8 days' absence. For, to omit the things which were the same and yet appeared so different, amid this solitude, the little vale where was my chief abode, 'twas not indifferent to a youthful mind to note, perhaps, some sheltered seat in which an old man had been used to sun himself, now empty. Pale-faced babes whom I had left in arms, known children of the neighbourhood, now rosy prattlers, tottering up and down, and growing girls whose beauty, filched away with all its pleasant promises, was gone to deck some slighted playmate's homely cheek. Yes, I had something of another eye, and often looking round was moved to smiles such as a delicate work of humour breeds. I read, without design, the opinions, thoughts of those plain living people in a sense of love and knowledge. With another eye, I saw the quiet woodman in the woods, the shepherd on the hills. With new delight, this chiefly, did I view my grey-haired dame, saw her go forth to church or other work of state, equipped in monumental trim, short velvet cloak, her bonnet of the like, a mantle such as Spanish cavaliers wore in old time. Her smooth domestic life, affectionate without uneasiness. Her talk, her business, pleased me, and no less her clear though shallow stream of piety that ran on Sabbath days a fresher course. With thoughts unfelt till now, I saw her read her Bible on the Sunday afternoons, and loved the book when she had dropped asleep and made a pillow of it for her head. Nor less do I remember to have felt distinctly manifested at this time, a dawning, even as of another sense, a human-heartedness about my love, for objects hitherto the gladsome air of my own private being, and no more, which I had loved, even as a blessed spirit or angel, if he were to dwell on earth, might love in individual happiness. But now there opened on me other thoughts of change, congratulation, and regret, a newborn feeling. It spread far and wide. The trees, the mountains shared it, and the brooks, the stars of heaven now seen in their old haunts, white Sirius glittering o'er the southern crags, Orion with his belt, and those fair seven acquaintances of every little child, and Jupiter, my own beloved star. Whatever shadings of mortality had fallen upon these objects heretofore were different in kind, not tender, strong, deep, gloomy were they, and severe, the scatterings of childhood, and moreover had given way in later youth to beauty and to love, enthusiastic to delight and joy. As one who hangs down-bending from the side of a slow-moving boat upon the breast of a still water, solacing himself with such discoveries as his eye can make beneath him in the bottom of the deeps, sees many beauteous sights, weeds, fishes, flowers, grots, pebbles, roots of trees, and fancies more, yet often is perplexed, and cannot part the shadow from the substance, rocks and sky, mountains and clouds, from that which is indeed the region, and the things which there abide in their true dwelling, now is crossed by gleam of his own image, by a sunbeam now, and motions that ascend he knows not whence, impediments that make his task more sweet. Such pleasant office have we long pursued, incumbent o'er the surface of past time, with like success. Nor have we often looked on more alluring shows, to me at least, more soft or less ambiguously descried, than those which now we have been passing by, and where we still are lingering. Yet in spite of all these new employments of the mind, there was an inner falling off. I loved deeply, all that I had loved before, more deeply even than ever. But a swarm of heady thoughts jostling each other, gauds and feast and dance and public revelry and sports and games, less pleasing in themselves than as they were a badge, glossy and fresh, of manliness and freedom. These did now seduce me from the firm habitual quest of feeding pleasures, from that eager zeal, those yearnings which had every day been mine. A wild, unworldly minded youth, given up to nature and to books, or at the most from time to time by inclination shipped one among many, in societies that were or seemed as simple as myself. But now was come a change. It would demand some skill and longer time than may be spared to paint even to myself these vanities and how they wrought. But sure it is that now contagious air did oft environ me, unknown among these haunts in former days. The very garments that I wore appeared to prey upon my strength, and stopped the coarse and quiet stream of self-forgetfulness. Something there was about me that perplexed the authentic sight of reason, pressed too closely on that religious dignity of mind that is the very faculty of truth, which, wanting, either from the very first, a function never lighted up, or else extinguished, man, A creature great and good seems but a pageant plaything with vile claws, and this great frame of breathing elements a senseless idol. This vague, heartless chase of trivial pleasures was a poor exchange for books and nature at that early age. 'Tis true some casual knowledge might be gained of character or life, but at that time of manners put to school I took small note, and all my deeper passions lay elsewhere. Far better had it been to exalt the mind by solitary study, to uphold intense desire by thought and quietness. And yet, in chastisement of these regrets, the memory of one particular hour doth here rise up against me. In a throng, a festal company of maids and youths, old men and matrons, staid, promiscuous rout, a medley of all tempers, I had passed the night in dancing, gaiety and mirth, with din of instruments and shuffling feet and glancing forms and tapers glittering and unaimed prattle flying up and down, spirits upon the stretch, and here and there slight shocks of young love-liking interspersed that mounted up like joy into the heart and tingled through the veins. Ere we retired, the cock had crowed. The sky was bright with day. 2 miles I had to walk along the fields before I reached my home. Magnificent the morning was, a memorable pomp, more glorious than I ever had beheld. The sea was laughing at a distance. All the solid mountains were as bright as clouds, grain-tinctured, drenched in empyrean light. And in the meadows and the lower grounds was all the sweetness of a common dawn. Dews, vapours, and the melody of birds, and labourers going forth into the fields. Ah, need I say, dear friend, that to the brim my heart was full. I made no vows, but vows were then made for me. Bond unknown to me was given, that I should be, else sinning greatly, a dedicated spirit. On I walked in blessedness, which even yet remains. Strange rendezvous my mind was at that time, a party-coloured show of grave and gay, solid and light, short-sighted and profound, of inconsiderate habits and sedate, consorting in one mansion unreproved. I knew the worth of that which I possessed, though slighted and misused. Besides, in truth, that summer, swarming as it did with thoughts transient and loose, yet wanted not a store of primitive hours, when, by these hindrances unthwarted, I experienced in myself conformity as just as that of old to the end and written spirit of God's works, whether held forth in nature or in man. For many wanderings that have left behind remembrances not lifeless, I will here single out one, then pass to other themes. A favourite pleasure hath it been with me from time of earliest youth to walk alone along the public way, when, for the night deserted, in its silence it assumes a character of deeper quietness than pathless solitudes. At such an hour, once, ere these summer months were passed away, I slowly mounted up a steep ascent where the road's watery surface to the ridge of that sharp rising glittered in the moon and seemed before my eyes another stream creeping with silent laps to join the brook that murmured in the valley. On I went, tranquil, receiving in my own despite amusement as I slowly passed along from such near objects as from time to time perforce intruded on the listless sense, quiescent and disposed to sympathy, with an exhausted mind worn out by toil and all unworthy of the deeper joy which waits on distant prospect, cliff or sea, the dark blue vault and universe of stars. Thus did I steal along that silent road, my body from the stillness drinking in a restoration like the calm of sleep, but sweeter far. Above, before, behind, around me, all was peace and solitude. I looked not round, nor did the solitude speak to my eye, but it was heard and felt. O happy state! What beauteous pictures now rose in harmonious imagery. They rose as from some distant region of my soul and came along like dreams, yet such as left obscurely mingled with their passing forms a consciousness of animal delight, a self-possession felt in every pause and every gentle movement of my frame. While thus I wandered, step by step led on, it chanced a sudden turning of the road presented to my view an uncouth shape, so near that slipping back into the shade of a thick hawthorn, I could mark him well, myself unseen. He was of stature tall, a foot above man's common measure tall, stiff in his form, and upright, lank and lean, a man more meagre, as it seemed to me, was never seen abroad by night or day. His arms were long, and bare his hands. His mouth showed ghastly in the moonlight. From behind, a milestone propped him, and his figure seemed half sitting and half standing. I could mark that he was clad in military garb, though faded, yet entire. He was alone, had no attendant, neither dog, nor staff, nor knapsack. In his very dress appeared a desolation, a simplicity that seemed akin to solitude. Long time did I peruse him with a mingled sense of fear and sorrow. From his lips, meanwhile, there issued murmuring sounds, as if of pain or of uneasy thought. Yet still his form kept the same steadiness, and at his feet his shadow lay and moved not. In a glen hard by, a village school, whose roofs and doors were visible among the scattered trees, scarce distant from the Spartan arrow's flight. I wished to see him move, but he remained fixed to his place, and still from time to time sent forth a murmuring voice of dead complaint, groans scarcely audible. Without self-blame, I had not thus prolonged my watch, and now, subduing my heart's specious cowardice, I left the shady nook where I had stood and hailed him. Slowly, from his resting place, he rose, and with a lean and wasted arm, in measured gesture lifted to his head, returned my salutation, then resumed his station as before. And when ere long I asked his history, he in reply was neither slow nor eager, but unmoved, and with a quiet, uncomplaining voice, a stately air of mild indifference, he told in simple words a soldier's tale, that in the tropic islands he had served, whence he had landed scarcely 10 days past, that on his landing he had been dismissed, and now was travelling to his native home. At this I turned and looked towards the village, but all were gone to rest, the fires all out, and every silent window to the moon shone with a yellow glitter. "No one there," said I, "is waking. We must measure back the way which we have come. Behind yon wood a labourer dwells, and take it on my word, he will not murmur should we break his rest, and with a ready heart will give you food and lodging for the night." At this he stooped, and from the ground took up an oaken staff by me yet unobserved, a traveller's staff, which I suppose from his slack hand had dropped and lain till now neglected in the grass. Towards the cottage, without more delay, we shaped our course. As it appeared to me, he travelled without pain, and I beheld with ill-suppressed astonishment his tall and ghastly figure moving at my side. Nor while we journeyed thus could I forbear to question him of what he had endured from hardship, battle, or the pestilence. He, all the while, was in demeanour calm, concise in answer. Solemn and sublime he might have seemed, but that in all he said there was a strange half-absence, and a tone of weakness and indifference, as of one remembering the importance of his theme, but feeling it no longer. We advanced slowly, and ere we to the wood were come, discourse had ceased. Together on we passed, in silence through the shades, gloomy and dark. Then, turning up along an open field, we gained the cottage. At the door I knocked, calling aloud, "My friend, here is a man by sickness overcome. Beneath your roof this night let him find rest, and give him food, if food he need, for he is faint and tired." Assured that now my comrade would repose in comfort, I entreated that henceforth he would not linger in the public ways, but ask for timely furtherance and help such as his state required. At this reproof, with the same ghastly mildness in his look, he said, "My trust is in the God of heaven, and in the eye of him that passes me." The cottage door was speedily unlocked, and now the soldier touched his hat again with his lean hand, and in a voice that seemed to speak with a reviving interest, till then unfelt, he thanked me. I returned the blessing of the poor unhappy man, and so we parted. Back I cast a look, and lingered near the door a little space, then sought with quiet heart my distant home.